some reason or other, I couldn't even hear myself. So now I think I can. I hope you're having a wonderful day today. It's a little bit better for me. I had a really rough last Monday, as you probably remember. But I have a daughter-in-law who's a nurse, and so she's given me a couple of really high-powered cough drops to help me get through today. If you hear the microphone go dead for a moment, that probably means I'm putting another cough drop in my mouth. What is today? Is it today is the 7th, and I'm looking forward to going to pick my wife up, who's in North Carolina, sometime this week. I haven't figured that one out yet. She's down there with my grandchildren. I have lots of birthdays right around the turn of the calendar. Matter of fact, that's kind of an interesting story. I'll tell you briefly. I won't get into the sordid details about it, but when I was my wife and I were much younger, we decided that we were going to have a second child, and my wife was pregnant, and we knew that the due date was sometime before New Year's. And I had been thinking, being a cheapskate that I am, I had been thinking that if we could have the baby before the end of the year, I could write that. At that time, it was like a $750 tax deduction, which was real money back in those days. I could get that. But days went along and went along, and it came along Christmas, and no baby on the doorstep. As we got closer, my father-in-law was our pediatrician, our family doctor. He was everything to us as far as medical goes. And I said to Dad, "Hey, Dad, how can I make this baby come before the change of the year?" And he gave me three different suggestions, one of which was to take castor oil, have her ingest castor oil. Another one, I won't go into the other two because they're kind of disgusting. But anyway, so we did the things that Dad said on the day before New Year's, and sure enough, my little beautiful baby daughter was born, Amy Elizabeth. I'm not exactly sure what time, but it was before the midnight hour, so we were able to take her off as a tax deduction, and she's been holding me to that ever since. It was kind of interesting, though, that we were in the hospital with several other people, and I think the lady that was sharing the room with my wife was the lady that had the firstborn of the next year, and I think she got a few blankets and a few little toys, but nowhere near the $750 tax deduction. Anyway, as you can hear, I'm still pretty well verklempt, as they say in the business, but I thought, going back, I've been telling you about my life story, and we've pretty much gotten through all the big stuff. So I thought each week I would, I've had a wonderful life. No, I cannot complain to anybody about the life that I've had. As a matter of fact, part of my life is going to come to fruition next, I think it's Sunday. Three of my former students, we're all going down to Columbus to see the Blue Jackets play. And we've tried to do something every year, mainly play golf, but we missed it last year. So we're going to go see the Blue Jackets play this year. I'm looking forward to that. It's wonderful. Facebook has been great to me. I know a lot of people hate Facebook, and a lot of people say it's corrupt and stuff like that. And I'm sure there are people that use it in a bad way, but for me, I've been able to stay in touch with dozens of former students that worked for me. When I was at both at DePaul and at Ohio University, I had student aides, usually somewhere between 10 and 20 a year, that would help me out really work for nothing, but because they wanted to get into sports information, or they wanted to become announcers, or they wanted to become assistant athletic directors like I was. I don't know why they would want to do that, but anyway, several of them I've been in touch with over the years. And each year it seems that I find one more new student that I hadn't found before, or they find me. And so my gang of students, former students, it keeps growing every year, and I really enjoy that. Brings back lots of memories. I also start putting the calendar to it, and it's kind of scary as we get older and older. But anyway, one of the things I thought maybe I'd talk to you about today, about my life, and then we'll go into some of the things about the progressive life. The name of this show is it's a progressive life, and I'll get into that after I tell you these stories about sailing. I was I guess in my early 30s, and a friend of my brother's, as a matter of fact, a stockbroker friend of my brother's, who obviously had more money than I did, had a sailboat that raced out of Chicago, out of Michigan City, and out of Benton Harbor. The three, they're all around the southern tip of Lake Michigan. And he needed somebody to help him race the sailboat, and usually had a crew of four or five, but on long races, overnight races, it would be up to as many as seven. And I had raced sailboats when I was young, out of Bayview in northern Michigan, up by Petoskey. And so I knew a little bit. I knew enough to be dangerous, and I was pretty strong, having been an athlete most of my life. And they needed a guy who could pull the ropes, or the lines, as we called them. But they needed somebody strong enough to pull them fast and pull them strong. And so I volunteered and started racing every weekend with this crew. We had some great times. We went to the Chicago to Mackinac race probably four or five, maybe six times, which is quite, that's really kind of what I was going to talk to you about today. The Chicago to Mackinac race, it's amazing. When I was racing, there were like 280 boats that would race in it. And they don't all race at the exact same moment. They take off in different fleets. There are all sorts of rules and regulations that you have to abide by. You have to have all sorts of safety equipment, and you have to have the certain right type of way to handle your waste, because you're not allowed to dump it into the lake, which is a good thing. It usually took about a day before the race just to get ready. So I would get up to Chicago, and we'd start to plan the race and get things in order and get lines tied down. And that was kind of fun, because you'd stand around and talk to all the other sailors around you and tell lies to each other about how great your sailboat was and how great you were. We had a good time. Drank a little bit too much beer, I'm sure. On the day of the race, it was kind of exciting. You would get in your group, and our group usually was right in the middle of the pack. We weren't the biggest boat, but we weren't the smallest boat. We were a 32-foot CNC. All seven members, and the reason why you had to have seven members when you raced on overnight races like the Chicago to Mack. The Chicago to Mack can take anywhere from 2 days or slightly under 2 days now. They've got some pretty fast boats. As a matter of fact, I think with the trimarans, they even have been able to do it in way less than 2 days. But back when I was racing, they just had monohulls, which means it just had one little pointy part at the bottom of the boat. And we were about midway in the group, but there were like eight groups, I'm guessing, and so we were like the fifth group to go. But we were big enough that we got to race alongside some pretty big boats. As a matter of fact, one year we were racing in a race against Courageous. And I don't know, you have to be a little bit older to remember Courageous, but it was a Ted Turner 12-meter sailboat, which meant it was probably around 63, 64 feet long, I think. And they were quite noisy. Not only were they screaming at each other, but their winch handles were louder than anybody else's. When they would come about, it would sound louder. The sails were so big. But it was kind of fun to be out on the starting line with them. Now, we didn't start with them, but everybody was kind of run around the starting line trying to figure out what the best angle for the start so they can get the fastest start. And it was amazing. It was some years you would see two 50-footers run into each other because they wanted to get a little bit better location on a start. Even though it was a three-day race, they were willing to put a hole in a $50,000 sailboat just to get, you know, a boat length on somebody else. But the one year I remember the most was we took off. It was fairly calm. It wasn't bad at all, and we headed out across the lake. Now, on the Chicago to Mackinac race, you get to a point on Lake Michigan where you can't see any shoreline. And that's kind of fun, kind of scary and kind of fun at the same time, but that's the way we headed. It's northwest. It's about 333 miles to go from Chicago to Mackinac if you go the shortest route. And so we took off, and we were having a good time. We were actually sailing pretty well, and we thought we were in probably the top 10, top 15 boats in our class. You raced in a class. We didn't race against the Courageous. They were in a completely different class. But we took off, and we could see that off in the distance there was a pretty big cloud cover coming our way. And we tried not to get too close to it, staying to our east. And as we went along, you take different watches. And I was on the late night watch, so you're on for 4 hours and off for 4 hours. And when I went on, the cloud bank had just caught up with us, and the rain was kind of picking up, and it was kind of exciting. It was more exciting than I wanted it to be. Now, we were all tethered in. You're required by the rules to have harnesses so that you can harness yourself to the boat in case anything would happen. All of a sudden, it seemed like nowhere, lightning started. And that's kind of scary when you have a 40-foot mast sticking up in the air and it's made out of aluminum and saying, hit us. And we started seeing boats around us get hit by the lightning. And if you get hit by lightning, it probably doesn't hurt anybody if they're not holding on to metal, but it goes right into the water because there's this big metal plank on the bottom of the sailboats that directs the electricity into the lake, and you don't get hurt that way. But it can, the power of the explosion that it makes can blow through hull, what they call through hull connections, or bolts that go through your hull to hold things on. It can blow them right out of the boat, and therefore you start taking on water. So we saw a few boats having to go start heading towards shore because they were in trouble like that. And we had actually been going for about a day, I guess it was, or day and a half, and we were up by the Manitou Islands. We were going to go inside the Manitou Islands, which meant the wind is coming over our left side, blowing us hard down. As we pulled up to the first Manitou Island, now, mind you, we're several hundred yards away from the island, but there's a wind break created by the island. And all of a sudden, the boat went straight up and down and then flopped back down. And we took what they call now I can't remember what the technical term is, but we basically put the boat's sail into the water, which knocked me off the boat. which was kind of exciting. But I was tethered to the boat. And so after dragging myself along in some water and pulling myself back up on board, the boat started to right itself, which they are all intended to do because they have a real heavy keel on them and they right themselves up. But the sail was soaking wet, which got us all soaking wet. It's called a knockdown. I just remembered what it was called. And it's because you got knocked down. That was pretty exciting. And that whole trip was quite exciting. And then after we went on, I think probably another 10 hours, there was nothing. And we just kind of sat there. I remember sitting, going down for my 4 hour off, hearing this buoy dinging. It was right next to, we were right next to a buoy and we weren't moving. And I heard this buoy dinging. And when I woke up 3 or 4 hours later, I could still hear it dinging. We had gone that short a distance, but it's such a beautiful thing to race out in the water way, way away from the shoreline. That evening, if I recall correctly, we got to see probably the most beautiful view of the Milky Way. When you're out that far, you have no light pollution, so all you can see is stars, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. And we were far enough north that there is a Air Force base up that way, and there were, I can't remember what model of airplanes, but there were jets doing bomb runs, and they went right over the top of us, very low. And they weren't dropping bombs. They were just doing the runs and stuff like that, doing the practice. And that was beautiful, too, with the Milky Way in the right behind them and everything. It will inspire you for weeks to come. It's so beautiful when you're out on the middle of Lake Michigan. And so anyway, that year, we did finally get going enough that we pulled into Mackinac Island, and we thought we were pretty good. As we were pulling, I mean, we weren't pulling into Mackinac Island. We were pulling under the bridge. I see I have a call, so I'm going to take this call. Hang on just a second. Hello?
Is this Glenn?
Yes, it is.
This is Dave Dixon calling.
Yeah, I see that on the phone.
We're not on the air, are we?
Yes, we are on the air.
Oh, boy. I heard you talk about Batoskin, and I said, he's got to be talking my language.
Yeah.
you remember the time I came up and was your crew?
I had so many crews, I do not remember.
It was when we were in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. If this is live, I want to tell you, this is one of the most decent individuals that I've ever met.
You're crazy.
And, and I'm sorry you didn't win your election.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. We didn't even come close.
Oh, boy. Well, I was with it in spirit, at least.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And we had some good times way back then, and I was talking earlier on the show about how many of my former students and former people that I've worked with I've been able to stay in touch with because of Facebook, yeah. And you're one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We both have faces for radio.
Yeah. And we were both on radio. That's how I got to know you.
Yeah. I just wanted to touch base with you and say hello.
Well, hello, Dave, and thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it.
You betcha. I'm listening to you right now, but I don't know if it's on the delay or not.
Yeah, it is. It's about a 30-second delay. So.
Yeah, I don't have my headphones on, but
good.
That's great.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later sometime.
Okay, Dave, nice talking to you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Dave Dixon, one of the first people I knew in radio. Matter of fact, he was the station manager I can't remember the call letters of the college station at WVUR, I believe it was, Valparaiso University Radio. Yeah, and we got to know each other quite well then. We actually became roommates for a while. I was probably the worst roommate in the world, absolute worst roommate in the world. I teased Dave unmercifully, but anyway, we had a good time and. we've learned to. Now you got to be nice to Dave because Dave was with the IRS, so you got to be good to him. And Dave, since you're listening, make sure that everything goes well with my taxes this year. Like he could do anything about it. Anyway, we were sailboat racing that I did was really completely different than most of the things I did. I raced sailboats because I enjoyed the excitement. I enjoyed the winning. Even when I lost, I felt like I had won because it was such a beautiful it was such a beautiful feeling to be out on the water and being able to adjust. I could adjust I was the foredeckman, so I adjusted the front sail, the big spinnaker, if you know, and I was the guy that got to adjust that. And I could tweak it down maybe one or two cranks on the little lever and make the boat increase a mile an hour faster. There was so much control and it was so much fun. And the camaraderie between the crew was always fun. Now there were coeducational crews. I don't know how they did the potty problems there, but if you're out in the lake for 3 or 4 days, you're gonna have to go potty at some time. But and they all do have what they call heads, and you can use those, but you better not use them for more than 5 or 6 days or you're going to overflow the stupid thing, which we did have a situation one time when we went 5 days and we were right at the edge of having to do something. We didn't know what we were going to do, but we got through the race and were able to pump that off, if you'll excuse me, my vulgarness there. Anyway, that's kind of one of the things I did. Next week, well, I'm not quite sure what I'll talk about, but I will keep giving you little stories about what I've done through my life. I've had some wonderful Mr. Dixon, the gentleman that just called in, he and I helped create a radio show called Power Prof. I'm sure you remember that, David. Power Prof was a superhero professor, and he would cure all sorts of ills. And we wrote that for several weeks and aired it every week for, well, it could have been months, I'm not sure, but had a great time doing that too. And I always did love radio. I always wanted to be in radio, much more so than television. As Dave said, we both have faces for radio. And Dave has a nice voice, and I had a fairly decent voice. It doesn't sound very good right now, which reminds me, I am going to pop one more cough drop in. Okay, I'm a new man now. Anyway, if you do want to call in, the number is 740-383-9944. And Dave must have called. I forget where Dave lives now, but it's several hundreds or dozens of miles from here, I believe. Anyway, let's get back on to one of the things I wanted to talk about is why I decided to run for state representative this past year. And the reason why I wanted to mention this is because we have so many things that are not fair. And the world is not fair, I know, but it could be a lot more fair if we would just be concerned about our fellow person's life. Why would anybody want to not allow somebody to have at least a living wage? Why would somebody not want somebody who has no money not to have food stamps so that they can feed their kids? We have such a discrepancy now in our salaries. One of the things I really wanted to run for is a cap on CEO salaries. Now, I knew the chances of that were slim and none, and Slim was walking out of town. Having a salary cap on CEO's wages, where you would you would tie it to the lowest paid employee. So let's say you had an employee that made $10 an hour, and let's say you had the CEO could only make 10 times the amount of the lowest paid employee, then the CEO could only make $100 an hour, which seems reasonable to me. Right now, there are CEOs that are making 400, 500, 600% above what the lowest paid person is. It just doesn't seem, I would think that would help the business as well, because they would be more profitable. They would be more productive because their people would want to stay with them. That was one of the things that I was concerned about. I really thought that we should return to regular order. You may remember when McCain was, when he cast his ballot, turning down the, the Affordable Care Act, or whenever it was, they talked about he wanted to return to regular order. In other words, not the order that we have now where one person can determine what's going to be voted on. Right now, we have one person that's holding up the voting on the payment of bills, and that's because of the wall. And I'm not saying it's Trump. It's really bad when you get this old and you can't remember the name of the gentleman that you're thinking of. But anyway, one person should not, in my opinion, should not be able to stop the American government. Nobody should be that powerful. One person should also not be above the law. And those are some of the things that I was campaigning on. Another thing I really was campaigning on, and I didn't bring it up a whole lot, but I always have thought, and this wasn't just because of the most current election, but I have always thought the Electoral College should be done away with. It had its uses when it first started, but as far as I can see, the only thing it's done in the last few years is elect two or three people that were not elected by the general population. And as far as I can see, that is not one person, one vote. And I really believe we need to go get back to one person, one vote. The other thing that has really caused lots of problems with one person, one vote is how gerrymandered we have become. Now, gerrymandering, and most of these rules were not intended to get a big advantage on the opposite party. Gerrymandering is. But when it first started, it wasn't nearly as one-sided as it's become right now. But there are far more Democrats that vote every year than Republicans. But Republicans get far more seats than Democrats get. And that's based on their shrewdness of gerrymandering so many districts back in 2010. And shrewdness should not be the way we run our government, as far as I can see. Thoughtfulness, yes, but shrewdness, a way of cheating the system or bending the system, I find is not a good way to make the populace more powerful and stronger. Anyway, I'm going to have to open up my phone because I can't remember what the other things were. Another reason why I ran was just to make my voice heard. Quite frankly, when I started to run for state representative in the 86th district, I knew the chance of me winning that were very slim because of how gerrymandered our district had become and how the Democrats had not done well in the district. But I wanted to make my voice heard. I wanted to make sure that the electorate had a firm choice one way or the other. My opponent, I did not argue with her about much of anything. She was absolute pro-life to the point where I believe she will be voting on the for the heartbeat rule. I believe that women should have their choice and not have it made for them by other people. But other than that, most of my thoughts were not terribly antagonistic towards my opponent. But I did have different choices, and I did want people to have the opportunity to vote for me or against me. I didn't mind them voting against me if they honestly thought it through and they believed it was not good for Ohio or for the United States. This way, by running, if nobody had run in for my position, they would have had no choice. And so that's, quite frankly, the reason why I did start to run. Then after a while, you start thinking, hey, I might win this. And that gets a little intoxicating to think that you might be able to make a difference. The other thing I was able to do as a running for office, I was able, especially at my age, I was able to, and I think I told my wife, I'm only running for one term. If people really want me for two, I would be willing to stay for two, but that was it. I was running for one term because I wanted people to hear what the truth sounds like. And right now we have a real problem hearing the truth. We make up the truth, if that's possible. We absolutely have no compunction against telling a little white lie or even a big white lie. And it's almost embarrassing how many lies are told by members of our government that everybody who's listening knows they're a lie. Even their supporters must know that they're lying in some of these things. I also wanted to fight against the immense amount of funding in government. We have so much money in government right now. And I think I told you this a long time ago. I was told that to win my election, I needed to raise $100,000. First of all, I didn't know how many zeros followed the one to make $100,000, but I knew that that was not going to be. And I kind of went against that because I came out and said, I do not want any money from the NRA. There was the kids that were doing the marches back in those days out of Florida. They asked politicians to take a pledge that said they would accept no money from the NRA, and I did take that pledge. I have nothing against guns. I was a soldier. I fired an M16. I must admit it was kind of fun. But I really believed that we needed some sensible gun laws, which we still don't have to this day, and I don't see it on the horizon for a while. Anyway, the money, I also told people I was not interested in accepting dark funds. My opponent did, and I'm sure it helped her considerably, but I refuse to accept dark funds. It seems to me if the funds have to be dark, somebody doesn't want you to know why they're funding this person, which seems to me right on the edge of corruption. I also decided, excuse my sniffling, I also decided that not only at my age and with my opinion that I didn't need to have this job to satisfy me or satisfy any financial needs that I had, I believe that you can tell the truth at that point. And everything that I told at that time, I told people the way I believed. if they had asked me an embarrassing question, and I can't think of one right now that people might ask. Now, Dave Dixon, my old friend, might think of a few, but I can't honestly think of any questions that I would have been embarrassed to answer. But I made it a point in my mind. If I went into it, I was going to tell the truth about everything, and it didn't make any difference. But I believe that I was there to support the middle class. I have nothing against the upper class. I have friends that are in the upper class. I have nothing against people that are in the upper middle class. I would say that my children are in that level. But I really wanted to fight back and bring on the working man, the people that have fought all their lives through heartache and war and worry and continued to hold their beliefs in the American way. And that's the person I was really fighting for, the person that was the strength of the United States of America. And when I say that, I mean they were the backbone, the middle class, the people who went to work every day. May not have had it. They're the people that right now are taking it in the neck with this shutdown that we're having, unfortunately. I wanted to give those people a voice. Not that I would not speak up for right and wrong for other classes, but that was my focus. I also believe, and I know this is a Republican statement, but I believed in fiscal responsibility, and I think that all people should believe in fiscal responsibility. Huge tax cuts like we had recently are, I think you've got to be careful of how many billions and billions and billions and even trillions of dollars you spend on the armed forces. Some of that stuff, as we all know, some of that money is wasted. Because of certain people who have power to get something passed that they know is not going to work. I think we do need those sensible gun controls, which I mentioned prior to this, things like, and I appreciate the fact, I believe the president has decided not to allow bump stocks or to set rules about the bump stocks and stuff, but I think we need to go a little further than that. I think we need to at least have people who own guns have their gun have open registration so that people know who has guns and who doesn't have guns. I also believe in health care for everyone, and there are lots of ways that we can have health care for everyone. The ways like Sweden and places like that, where it's more of a social, socialistic type of form of health, or the way the Affordable Care Act works, where it's kind of a socialistic way, but it's also you pay a part of your own way, but it needs to be fair for all, and it was relatively fair for all until we started fiddling with it and tearing the required mandate away. All that does is allow people. If you're an older person like I remember when I was younger, I didn't think I needed health care. Of course not. I was never going to die. But I do believe we need to find a way to have health care for everyone. And I don't mean 98%. I mean 100% of the American population. We need to care for all of our citizens, no matter their color of their skin, the choice of their life partner, their age. That's another thing that's kind of annoying me right now. I've decided pretty much that I've been asked to run again, and I pretty much have decided I'm not going to run again, because the chance of me running again, whether it's good or bad, the fact that I happen to be an older white guy, there would be people that wouldn't vote for me. And I was told by a woman at a thing I went to while I was running for office. She said to me, I wasn't going to vote for you because you're an older white guy. But she hadn't met me. And she said, now that I've met you, I am going to vote for you. So we've got to be careful of how we judge people, whether it's black, white, old, young, any of those things. Each person is an individual, and we need to make sure that that's what we care about, not their age, not how many gray hairs they have, not how whether they like same-sex partners. It shouldn't make a difference. We need to fight the misogyny of this of America right now. And I don't know why we got that way. I guess I do. We were brought up with certain people having certain roles. And when I was young, the woman stayed at home and the man went to work. That was a role. There are people that don't like change. And quite frankly, I love change. And I think change is the best thing for the United States of America. The reason why we have become such a strong nation is because of change. It's because we have all sorts of immigrants coming into the United States. Immigrants from Thailand, immigrants from the Middle East, immigrants from England, from everywhere, Mexico. And if we didn't have that, if you're a cook, you know that if you add the right spices, and they help, they don't hurt. And we need to add more spice to our American population. We need to fight the racism in this country that we have right now. The sad part about the racism thing is that lots of people try to cover it up with, I hate the old expression, one of my best friends is a black guy. Well, why don't you just say one of my best friends is John Smith? Why does he have to be noted as a black guy? Well, that's because we all have a little bit of racism that we are raised up with, including yours truly. I fight it every day. I hope I can completely cure myself of it by the time I pass these mortal chains. I have quite often tried to run, and it's getting close to the end of my time, a few quotes that I've noticed during the week. And one of them that I really had a chuckle at was said by Hubert Humphrey. He said, "To err is human. To blame someone else is politics." Boy, nothing truer was said even today. Another quote that I got from Victor Pinchuk, and I didn't know who Victor Pinchuk was, and so I had to look him up, and he's a Ukrainian philanthropist, but also it mentions that he's probably in the oligarchy in Ukraine. But he had a rather insightful quote: "Art, freedom, and creativity will change society faster than politics." And I truly believe that. I believe as we take art and beauty and creativity out of our schools, we lose more than we gain. I know they cost money, but they are well worth the price. And the last quote is from Harvey Milk. You may remember Harvey was a politician out of San Francisco. I believe he died of AIDS. There is a movie about him. He said, "Give him hope." And that's really why I ran for office. I ran for office because I wanted to give people hope that there was somebody that would help out their cause, not just the rich guys down the street that don't care about other people. I wanted to give people hope. And I'm certain that my opponent wanted to give people hope too, but I'm not sure she had really looked at it with the same eyes that I look at it with. Having a minister for a father and a mother and sister who were next to godliness, I really believe that we need to give each other hope. We need to hold each other's hands as we walk down the street in darkness, and hope that we can pull ourselves up, and hope that we can help each other rather than hurt each other. I never have understood why people want to take stuff away from other people, especially people that call themselves Christians. Please, if you're going to call yourself a Christian, read the New Testament, the sayings of Jesus Christ, and I hope that you'll understand why what we're doing right now is not a terribly, we are not a terribly Christian nation. Not that I'm a Christian. I look at myself as a agnostic. But anyway, I hope you have a wonderful week this week, and I'll be back on at the same time next week. Dave, thanks for calling in, and we'll get out of here and let the music ride.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. From legendary comedian Abe Vigoda.
Can you still recite Shakespeare?
Yes, methinks I am a prophet, new inspired, and thus aspiring to foretell of him. His rash, fierce blaze of riot cannot last, for violent fires soon burn out themselves. Like vanity, insatiate cormorants, consuming means soon preys upon the soul. And go on and on, this royal throne of kings, this sceptred isle, this earth.